missing this.
When that didn't materialise, I think both Paulie and myself probably looked at each other and kind of thought, what next?
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now you're welcome along. Much to discuss. The Pro 14 Interpros continue at the Aviva Stadium this weekend. Coming Leinster Ulster is at 7:35 on the Saturday. On the Sunday, Munster take on Connacht. And as things stand, Leinster, Ulster and Edinburgh all through to the semis, with Munster still best placed to take the last qualifying spot. To discuss, we have Liam Toland, who was on commentary with Ayr over the weekend, and Keane Tracy of the Irish Independent. Gents, you're both very welcome. Keane, we might start though with the breaking news from Ulster Rugby.
Yeah, so Ulster have just confirmed that a group of their academy players have tested positive for COVID, which is a huge blow, obviously, coming 2 weeks after the Munster Academy player. They haven't said how many players, but they've said a number, which is quite concerning. Contract tracing is underway and one senior player is self-isolating. So it's not what you want a few days out from a game. And I suppose we'll have to wait and see what implications it will have for this weekend. I know when it happened in Munster, they were pretty sure that they had the virus under control. But the fact that it's a number of Ulster players now is quite concerning.
That's the key point, isn't it? To what extent it's under control in Ulster, does it put the game at the weekend in jeopardy? Liam, this was always going to be a precarious high-wire act for Irish rugby.
Yeah, it is. And it doesn't just extend itself to the professional game. I know the club game is trying to work out the permutations of what happens if and all the different knock-on effects. It's really worrying because just like we had a wonderful weekend of rugby just gone by, and only a few short days later, the future fixtures are brought into doubt because of this COVID world we're living in. So it's like it has a potential of kind of torrenting out of control, which would be terrible, particularly because we had such a great starting weekend.
Is that just a statement that Ulster Rugby have released, Keane, in the last while, yeah?
Yeah, it's literally just come out now in the last few minutes, Joe. So the provinces were all tested again this week, I think on Monday, as part of the IRFU's, you know, testing programme. Obviously, they've only just got the results back today, so they're... the news is only coming out in the last few minutes. So that's all we know. Like I said, they haven't stated how many cases, but it's another reminder of how precarious the whole situation is, because while, you know, Ulster, Munster, Connacht and Leinster can control a certain amount within their own four walls, like the players still have to go out in the public, and that's the concern. And it's interesting that it's a group of academy players again, but it's one senior player as well is caught up with it too. So yeah, it's not great. It's a sobering reminder, like Liam says, because it was such a cracking weekend and you kind of dared to be positive again. And this is another, I think, step back, you know.
And not to put you on the spot, at Munster, there was a senior player as well who had to isolate, wasn't there?
Yeah, so in Munster, there was a senior player and five academy players who were identified as potential close contacts. So Ulster have said there's one senior player, a potential close contact. And again, they haven't given us an exact figure on how many players have tested positive, but training has been cancelled for both the senior and academy team. I think that's the protocols that are in place. It was the same for Munster. And, you know, like that ended up being pretty costly for Munster because they had to cancel a session that included a behind the closed doors game against each other, which was seen as big preparation leading into the Leinster game. So we'll have to wait and see how much of a disruption it will be for Ulster, but it's certainly not ideal.
So Liam, top of my head thinking here, you're hoping that that is the only senior player who's come into contact with those academy players with COVID, and he promptly tests negative and the senior team can get back training very, very quickly. The game goes ahead, and obviously we wish everybody a speedy recovery in the academy. That's kind of best case scenario here, and that is possible.
It is, but I'm sure that there's each rugby club, which would include the provinces, would have a COVID director, whatever title they give them, and he's probably got a bunch of binders and files that he's frantically running through in terms of what exactly to do, because like certainly in my own experience, there was a torrent of information knowledge coming down, and you're just waiting for that first time when you have to open up the file and say, listen, this is what we got to do. The more often it happens, the more comfortable we're becoming it, obviously. But you were kind of fingers crossed hoping that it would just be that, let's get on with it now, let's get on with life. And it's a timely reminder, you just can't take that for granted. But you're right. Can you isolate the bubbles down to save the fixture, essentially? And not just to save the fixture, but we saw with Munster, with the injuries that they had through the fixture itself, we wanted the integrity of the fixture to survive as well. So you're not putting out a third string side or a second string. You want to get the best players on the pitch, don't you?
Absolutely. Keane, as I understand it, there's no hard, fast rule from an IRFU point of view when there is a positive case. It doesn't automatically mean the game is off. It seems like it's a judge each situation on its merits approach.
Yeah, I suppose it's all new ground, isn't it, for everyone, really? I know in the Munster case, in the immediate aftermath, the word was that the IRFU were kind of adamant behind the scenes that it wasn't going to affect the Munster-Leinster game going ahead. Like I said, because it's more than one individual testing positive, it's hard to know if that will change their thinking. But yeah, it's just all up in the air at the moment. But I think the one thing I would say is that it was inevitable that we were going to have more cases. You know, it was impossible that you were going to go through rugby's return without getting these things. I think the clubs will have been prepared. Like, that's why they've cancelled training straight away. So there are protocols in place that Ulster have adhered to, just like Munster did.
Okay. Well, that's the breaking news again this evening. If you're just tuning in, a number of Ulster Academy players have tested positive for COVID-19. One senior player has been identified as a potential close contact and is self-isolating. No word that senior player has tested positive, just that they are a potential close contact of an academy player who has tested positive. We don't have a number on how many in the academy have tested positive. We've been told a number by the Ulster statement. Training has been cancelled and the Public Health Authority have been notified. So that is where we are. And if we'd been talking even half an hour ago, Liam, I would come on far more cheery and said, geez, it's all gone very well. How was the Aviva experience for you? Kind of a conversation. How was the Aviva experience for you?
Well, I suppose in a nutshell, it's always a privilege to be involved in fixtures like that, whether you're a player or working in the media or in the crowd. But, geez, the weekend was bizarre because walking down Lansdowne Road, it was like, you know, it was like Armageddon had just landed. There was no burger joints. There was no touts. There was no atmosphere. There was no crowds, no guards. And you just, I would say, without a shadow of a doubt, it was the cleanest, safest, least likely place you could pick up COVID in Western Europe, because I had to go through, I don't know how many gates to get in, to eventually get in, and it was really well run. I'm not saying that to take the piss, I'm saying that as the reality. The one thing I did do was I packed a match day lunch, because there was nothing to be had. So it was like being in the Killing Fields and Jerry Knockan and back in the day, where there was no cups of tea or anything. So it was wonderful for many. I was really looking forward to seeing the two South African World Cup winners playing. One lasted 7 minutes, the other played out. I just loved the game because my expectation was relatively low for all the obvious reasons. It's a first game back, etc. And there were mistakes and there were errors, and there were certainly times where certain players stood out. And there was other times where units stood out, but no one really demanded the entire fixture. Like, Johnny Sexton was fantastic in many ways. CJ Stander, if you took out his breakdown steals, would that have turned the tide in Leinster's favour to really go away? Because he was really, really important in slowing down the blue wave at several times. Lots of other players really shone. I thought Conor Murray had, during commentary, I was reflecting on it, how he clearly has the maturity of all the Lions and Irish internationals and all the fixtures he's played in to ease his way into the performance. We saw the young Casey coming on like a million miles an hour. But Conor Murray didn't overpressure us. I thought he played really, really well. And he gave JJ Hannon a really good opportunity. The questions for me around the 9, 10, 12, 13 from a Munster point of view remain fascinating, because I still think both sides that won at the weekend in Connacht and Leinster did so off less possession and less field position. So their use of the ball in both cases was easier. The outcome with less possession, less field position was easier. And I think there's lots of really interesting lessons around why that is the case.
Keane, what did you make of it in broad terms?
Yeah, I'd probably echo a lot of what Liam said. I mean, you never take this job for granted, and it was a privilege really to be there. I mean, before you even get to the rugby itself, like, I just thought it was fascinating to see games, you know, and be able to hear what was going on. You got to hear who the vocal leaders were and things like that. I have to say as well, like, I mean, the protocols and health and safety to get in beforehand, during and after were really good. So, I mean, it would give you hope that, you know, we've seen Murrayfield are due to welcome back crowds this week, I think it is. So it would give you hope that, you know, when we do finally get in position where you can get crowds, that it will be safe to do so. I was seriously impressed. And I think the rugby just on top of it over 2 days really capped it off. It was a cracking weekend.
Liam, to pick up then, you made several very interesting points. So Sexton was very good. If we extend the conversation to the out half conversation generally, Andy Farrell is going to be watching these games very closely in light of the Joey Carby news. To what extent did JJ Hanrahan take the opportunity you said Conor Murray gave him? And also talk to us about Jack Garty, who Keith Wood, I know, on Monday thought was very good. And then Madigan and Billy Burns up in Ulster is another interesting scenario. So there's a lot going on with Irish tens at the moment.
There is, and there has to be, doesn't there, because of the world we're living in. Taking JJ Hanrahan, like, he's clearly an extraordinarily talented player. And I picked Chris Farrell as man of the match for a few reasons, which are worthy of looking into. But Chris Farrell, for me, when Munster were playing at their best, he was playing at his best. And when Munster dipped away, he dipped away now, which is creating that. There's a cause and effect to it. But when you superimpose that on JJ Hanrahan, when the speed that recycled ball was quick, he was at his best. And I feel watching him, the less time he has to think about what's next option, the better he is. And some players are like that. You can see Sexton and Murray, they can think their way through the game. And there's huge advantages to that, because you won't always have a quick recycle. And Munster showed at the weekend that, you know, maybe for 30% of their ball time, they had quick recycle. But for 70%, they didn't. So what's a out half supposed to do during that period? And that's the piece that when I'm watching selfishly at a game like this, I'm watching what's JJ Hanrahan doing during that time, not necessarily when everything is going well, if that makes sense to you. And you layer in between that, you get D'Alande, who's obviously a fresh new guy. You got Chris Farrell as well. So how much of those two centres, well, D'Alande you'd forgive him because he's only getting to know the system. But how much leadership will ultimately be fed in from those two guys to JJ Hanrahan to help him control the fixture when the recycle ball isn't as quick as he can do it instinctively? That's the piece, I think, me personally watching him, that's the piece, if I was a back row player, that I'd be really interested in understanding. Is he managing the fixture when all isn't going as quickly as we'd like to do? And I think he can do it. I'm not so sure he achieved that on Saturday in that sense. But it was wonderful. Quick recycled ball. He was brilliant. Like the Keith Earls try, like Luke McGrath got a reasonable shot in him, but Earls did brilliantly well. And that, a lot of that came from JJ Hanrahan, the speedy ball. So really good performance from Hanrahan. That question is just my own personal question mark over how he manages it. And how much leadership can come from the centres to help him do that. Because he's going to be the 10 for the season, isn't he? So it's an important part of the journey, and one we should keep a close eye on. Regarding McCarthy, it was brilliant to see him back. And like, I don't know these guys, how much of a kick in the shins it is if you have a poor patch of form, if your patch's form is for Ireland, etc. So it's just great to see him back playing. And again, it's really interesting to see Connacht's performance off less ball and less territory against Ulster, who are a good side, who I just don't think went into the fixture in the right mental space. But to see him play and play with the joie de vivre, it was great. And to see all the players playing off him as well. So really, really good. I've less about Burns at 10 in Ulster, and Ian Madigan obviously started not in 10. So they have a lot of answers to answer. Like, the Ulster performance really was disappointing. Now, who you point fingers at, I think, is the group entirely didn't go into the fixture the way we would hope they would have done. I think this weekend they have a much greater challenge, because if they lose a second time, which is possible against Leinster, that's two losses in a row going into the semi-final against Edinburgh. And I think that would be very poor preparation for Dan McFarland and his team.
Yeah. Keen, what are your thoughts on those various 10 options that Andy Farrell is going to have? We haven't mentioned Ross Byrne, obviously, as well, but given Sexton's age, there is obviously a gap to next man in. Who is next man in?
I think think it's hard to know, really. I think you would, I'd like to see a bit more of Ross Byrne, but that's very hard when you have Sexton obviously there. And I thought Sexton was outstanding again, you know, just when you start asking these kind of questions, he delivers a huge performance. I thought JJ Hanrahan was very good. I still think there's elements of his game that, you know, the nuts and bolts that really do need tidying up. I know it's harsh to say, but he did miss the kick to draw the game, and that's what the top out halves will be judged on. It was a very tough kick, but I mean, you got to nail those if you want to be talked about in Johnny Sexton's company. I think they're all very different out halves. Like that, the game on Sunday, the Connacht game, was an ideal game, I think, for Jack Carthy, because he just thrives when he has that freedom to play running rugby, heads up rugby, and it was brilliant. It was Connacht at their absolute best, and when he gets the chance to play like that, it's all well and good. But that doesn't really translate to the international scene. I would suggest that Saturday's game between Leinster and Munster was much more like an international game than Sunday's was. It had a bit of a pre-season feel. Liam is right. I mean, Dan McFarlane was so scathing about his own players after the game, saying that, you know, the game had been over on the sofa the night before when Edinburgh had beaten Glasgow. So, look, Andy Farrell has plenty of options. I think even if you're to look at fullback, I think is another one that's going to be massively up for grabs. I didn't think Jordan Larmour did himself many favours at all. And it's interesting that Jacob Stockdale is now playing more often at 15. So I think coming into a really busy autumn period, there's actually several places, probably more than we thought, that are going to be up for grabs.
Yeah. I'll ask you about Stockdale actually in a moment, Liam, but just on Connacht, Andy Friend is going to pick an entirely new 15 for the Munster game. They're back, you know, they've done all this training, all this work for two games, and then they'll head off again for a pre-season and we'll see them again in October. How would you sum up the season they've had or the level of progress under Andy Friend?
Well, they're not playing for silverware, so in that sense, it's a sense of disappointment. But you get a feeling there's an element of transition, like he's a number of players, is it 6, 7, 8 players have been kind of, are moving on at the end of this season.
Yeah.
So you get a sense that they're, like, the overwhelming evidence of Andy Friend, if you look at Jack Carthy as an example, was they just seem to love playing rugby, and he seems to emphasize hugely that we've spoken about this a number of times, Joe. He seems to emphasize all the positives of how to play rugby. And I got a sense that he feels that his squad just quite isn't good enough to match that type of style of rugby for a start, and also the ability to play that type of rugby as well. Yeah. So you can see he's making a number of changes, bringing in new players. So I think it's a sense of transition. I think they should be rightly disappointed on 40 points because they're a reasonable distance away from Leinster, for example. But they're not that far off getting into the semi-final stages. So even though it is a sense of transition, I think there's an awful lot. There's some really good quality players within the group so I would frame it as a sense of transition, and I think we should start to get a little impatient if it doesn't begin to kind of meet the results that in next season.
Okay, you might pick up on Keane's point then. Jacob Stockdale, in the absence as much as anything of Will Addison, and maybe even at the behest of Andy Farrell, is spending plenty of time at 15. Jordan Larmour generally talked about as looking uncomfortable at the weekend to some extent or other. The 15 situation.
Yeah, like, again, I was obviously at the game, the Leinster game. Now, we're seeing the evolution of the players, the Leinster players on the box kick, filling the field and giving, in Jordan Larmour's case, the much protections they possibly can to give him to field the ball. I just think, and maybe it's just the first game out, I think we don't have to be overly critical of him, I think, because it's the first game out. But his timing was at times was poor. In other words, he was jumping into space where the ball was never going to actually really land. And of course, we're well used to seeing Rob Kearney and many other players, Gervin Dempsey, so many players in a Leinster jersey just taken for granted that's doing. I think we could put down as a one-off. I think it's really interesting to see what Leo Cullen does. How does he support this? Because if he starts chopping and changing, I think it could set Larmour into a negative place over time. I think we should look at it as a one-off. The problem is that Saracens were watching as well, as are other teams that Leinster are going to be playing against in coming times. Mm. And that's the difficulty, something you need to get right. Now, from a law point of view, the Leinster players were filling into that area. Had Larmour caught the ball, the way the referees are going to start refereeing that, they're going to start saying, well, you Leinster player, as the ball was in the air, you're fine, you didn't change your line. But now that Larmour's caught the ball, you could be pulled for obstruction.
Right.
So expect this weekend, if Larmour catches that ball and he's down on the deck, and the trigger giveaway is that the Leinster player, all the players, all the clubs are doing it, they'll put their hands up in the air and they'll indicate to the ball catcher, Larmour in this case, to run through, and they'll just block the oncoming defenders, the oncoming Ulster defenders. So expect that. So I would say I personally would give him a free pass, but he's got, because if you change him now, it could be a cruel blow to his confidence, etc. Overall, in all those names, and I leave it, like Andrew Conway can play fullback too. Like Andrew Conway, pound for pound, must be. Like Keith Earls is outrageous, but Andrew Conway is in his shadow in a sense, but he has more than earned the right to be in that conversation as well.
And am I very old-fashioned to wonder, is he tall enough for fullback, yeah?
Well, when you see him in the ground on Saturday at the weekend, like he fights for it. Like he was catching ball that taller, bigger men were jumping there, not getting. Like he's hunger, and he just won't go away. Like you just can't get rid of him. Just leave me alone. Let me catch it myself. Why are you always in my face? Like his competitive spirit in the air is phenomenal, and he is short, obviously, but I think he's well worthy of a conversation, definitely.
Okay.
And I certainly would be ashamed to see, when competition really hots up for the Irish slots, it'd be shame to see a player like Andrew Conway lose out, because I think he's more than earned the right to be in that conversation.
No, it's true. His form is hard to ignore. And I know he's talked about improving in the air massively under Joe Schmidt in particular. And Keane, then, that is Stockdale. I mean, he's played a little bit at 15 underage for Ireland, as far as I know. What were you seeing?
Yeah, so he was on the Ireland under-20s team, that really outstanding team when James Ryan was captain in 2016, the first Irish team to beat New Zealand when they got to the World under-20s World Cup final. And he was really, really impressive. And I was sort of surprised that he didn't kind of kick on more and become fullback for Ulster. Saturday was, I think I was writing a piece in today's paper, was his third start at fullback, which is more than he's had since he's basically started his career with Ulster. So I think that's probably telling in itself. I think the one person I think is worth mentioning in the conversation is Will Addison, but unfortunately he just can't keep fit. He's someone I'm really impressed with every time I see. I think he brings a sense of calm. He brings others into play. I wouldn't be surprised if Andy Farrell is having a word in Dan McFarland's ear either. Now, their hand is somewhat forced, like I said, without Addison, and Robert Balakoon is injured as well. But yeah, like I think his positional play is an obvious one that's going to have to work on. Also, his distribution, if he's going to be playing fullback, he's got to bring others into play, which I think is also something Jordan Larmour has to learn, because these guys, because they're so explosive and they're so fast and powerful, they tend to do a lot themselves. But I think it's important to bring the players in around you as well. But I thought there was a lot to like from Stockdale. The way he took his try, it might look simple, but he times his run by hitting that line really good. So I don't think there's any question as an attacking force that he's really good. It's just his defence in the wing has been called into question, and if that has been the case, which it has been, I think teams would target him fullback as well. But we're still talking about, like Liam was talking about Jordan Larmour there, like in Stockdale, they're such young guys. I think we've been treated so much to Rob Kearney being so safe at the back, and there has been calls to, you know, get more of an attacking spark, but I think we've got to be, you know, get the right balance between calling for guys to, you know, be running the ball from their own 22 and actually doing the nuts and bolts of full back play, which it probably went underappreciated, to be honest, by Kearney, by a lot of people for years. And we might even see him come back into the Leinster team now with his brother Dave's injury. So there's a lot for Andy Farrell to ponder. But I guess if the amount of games that we're talking about go ahead over autumn, he'll get plenty of chances to look at these guys.
It's funny, you look back at 09, which culminated in the Lions tour, where he was just ridiculous in the air, Kearney. I mean, we quickly just chalked that up as a given and said, what have you done for me lately? And never really appreciated what we had. On the Snyman injury, which is obviously just horrific, dreadful, like you can't believe your luck if you're Johan van Graan right now. 6 months minimum, ACL. Are they going to bring someone else in, Keane? Or I think they were saying they were happy enough as they are.
Yeah, so I suppose it's absolutely horrendous. Like, I mean, you just have to really feel for the guy as well, and also for Johan van Graan, who's bent over backwards to get him in, and another key signing on the back of Joey Carberry being ruled out for the foreseeable future. But the injury is exacerbated by the fact that Jean Klein has also picked up a neck injury and is also going to be out for a long time. So that's a lot of South African beef you're missing in your second row there. So yeah, Dave, Stephen Larkin was talking today, and they are going to stick with what they have. But I mean, if another injury becomes to someone like a Billy Holland or a Ty Byrne, then you're in serious trouble. I think they do have, you know, Thomas Ahern is obviously the name on everyone's lips and everyone wants to see him getting a go. Hopefully we will see him getting a go. An under 20 stars, absolutely had such a brilliant year, hasn't played yet. And I think, to be fair to Munster supporters, like, they want to see these guys coming through. There's a real thirst to see these academy guys because there is a good bunch coming through right now. I think this weekend would be an ideal time to hopefully see Thomas Ahern on the bench. And I think it's worth mentioning, like, if Leo Cullen, and everyone talks about how good Leinster's system is, and we don't need to go over that, like, it's sensational what they do, but Leo Cullen would have known that Orgie Snyman was going to start last weekend, and he had absolutely no problem throwing a 21-year-old Ryan Baird in up against him, and he did really well. Now, I know Baird is, like, a year older than Thomas Ahern, he's slightly ahead, but why not? Like, let's get a look at Thomas Ahern this weekend. You know, Munster should get the job done. Connacht are talking about making 15 changes. Why not have him on the bench and give him a chance to get to play at the Aviva?
Yeah, true. Liam, we've touched on kind of Connacht and Ulster, the bigger pictures. Ulster psychologically not in a great place and for that game, and Connacht in this period of transition and hopefully progression. What about Leinster, Munster, big picture stuff? What did you see at the weekend?
Well, I saw a fair bit, but I'd probably frame it in a way that it's how Connacht and Leinster can lay a trap was much better than how Munster and Ulster can lay a trap. And what I mean by that is, like, you look at De Allende, who his first kind of carry was from a standing start. He was double teamed by Cian Healy and I think Josh Van der Fleer. There's no ground. But the first real set piece where he could have really carried, he was used as a decoy, and I think that was disappointing, because I think if you look at when Leinster are at their best, they lay these traps all over the place that ultimately they can switch the position of the ball and they can attack down. And you saw the James Lowe try came from that, where Jonathan Second slips down the blind side. He's a quality young second row, and then James Lowe to finish off. Great hands, 3v2, and they convert it, and away you go. That's the piece that, like, if you look at CJ Stander, who I thought was phenomenal at the weekend, but one thing, if I was saying what's the difference, he picked off the base and he obviously zoned in on Johnny Sexton. And Johnny Sexton, you know, we've discussed a lot, is brave, etc. If CJ Stander could actually get Sexton to think he's going to run at him, but actually a couple of metres out, subtly changes and targets a weaker shoulder and gives an offload, that's kind of creating a trap. That everyone expects CJ Stander to run straight into Sexton. Everyone expects Sexton to stand up and try and hit him. But what would happen if Stander actually used that moment to do something different? Or if De Allende used that moment to do something different? And I think that's the key differences between Connacht, Leinster, and the two other sides. They're constantly laying traps around shifting the ball. And like the New Zealand teams play very across the pitch. They're not massively in depth, whereas Munster are a lot of times are in depth. They're taking the one out carriers and they're coming out and taking next one out carriers, so they're protecting the ball and they protect it very, very well. Whereas Leinster and Connacht are doing that. They're shifting the ball around an awful lot, and it is much more difficult to get your defence set, and particularly if there's a blind side, because you don't have the ability to kind of blitz on the blind side. So Leinster are constantly trying to create these mismatches, and they're happy and patient to get through to the fifth or sixth phase and then pull that trigger. And that's the piece that I'm really looking forward to seeing as Munster evolve under Larkham, etc. Can they start to do that a bit? And I would say that's probably it. Leinster, Connacht lay a trap, and the other two teams are still probably not doing so for a variety of reasons.
Okay, a final word to you and Keane on that point. Munster working that bit harder for their tries than Leinster was the general feeling.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think there was a lot to like, though, about Munster's shape and what they were doing. You could see definitely more of what Stephen Larkin wants them to do. I was really impressed with Chris Farrell, obviously, man of the match, but De Allende inside of him, I thought, really freed him up to do more of what he wants to do. I think if there was one thing that kind of summed up the difference between the two teams was the Gary Ringrose try. I think Munster still have a habit of going route one, kind of like what Liam touched on there, whereas, you know, Robbie Henshaw gets the ball and you're almost expecting him to truck it up the middle, and then he puts in this lovely kick. And we've seen how kicking has become almost reinvented in the last couple of years. You look at England, the amount of kicking options with Elliot Daly, Owen Farrell, George Ford that they've got in their backline. Saracens do the same, New Zealand do the same, the Crusaders. And, you know, Leinster obviously spent a bit of time talking to the Crusaders over lockdown, you know, kind of picking their brain in terms of, you know, the coaches picking each other's brains. And I believe the kicking was one of the big things that they focused on. And we're starting to see that more and more now because Gary Ringrose is a really good kicker. Jordan Larmour is. And I think they're the kind of subtle nuances that Munster are going to need to introduce to their attack to break down defences like Leinster, because Munster had to work a lot harder, like you said. And when they're coming up against the tougher defences, you're going to need something a little bit different, because I still feel like Leinster were in second gear in that game, whereas Munster were working much, much harder.
OK, well, we'll see how they get on against Connacht Sunday at 3 o'clock. And hopefully we do have Leinster-Ulster 7:35 on Saturday evening. Liam, I'm sure you're back in the commentary booth. Thanks very much. Keane Tracy of the Irish Independent. Thanks, fellas.
Thank you.
Cheers, Joe.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.